Hi, everybody. This is Pam, and you're listening to the podcast Women Who Stutter Our Stories, which can be found on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering at stutterrockstar.com and is also freely available as a download on iTunes. Today, as always, I have the pleasure and opportunity to chat with yet another amazing woman who's going to share parts of her story. So I want to say a big hello to Karen. Hey, Karen, how are you today?
Pam, I'm doing well, thanks.
It's good to have you on the show with us.
Yeah, I'm really happy to be here. I've been looking forward to it. With some anxiety, of course, but excited nonetheless.
Well, to get us started, could you formally introduce yourself to us? Tell us who you are and where you're from and what you do to keep busy.
Sure. My name is Karen Kreitzer. I live in San Antonio, Texas. I currently teach creative writing at a college preparatory, it's a K-12 school, but I teach it at the high school level. And it's a wonderful part-time job because it allows me time to work on my novel, which I've been working on for about 10 years, but it's getting wrapped up in the next month or so. So I'm excited.
Okay, awesome. How did you get involved in writing and particularly creative writing?
Well, I don't know if it's something that, you know, I was always thinking about doing, curious about doing. I certainly always loved stories and reading and writing. I think some of my fascination with writing has been the ability to clearly articulate myself, to say exactly what I want to say, to not be limited by my ability to speak. So as a person who stutters, that's certainly valuable. But my original plan was to be a high school English teacher, and I was for a while. I went straight from undergraduate to graduate school, got a master's in English literature. I think briefly thought, wow, I really like stories and I really like writing. But then I thought, no, that's nonsense. That's no job. And so I taught, and I loved teaching. I still love it. But I knew that I was not spending enough time with story, and I really felt like, and I continue to feel like, I have a story to tell. So a couple of years ago, I determined, all right, this is it. I can't teach full time anymore. It's too much grading. It's too much of other people's stories when I have my own. And so I left full time work and am now committed to being a full time writer.
Wow. So you said that you've been working on a novel for a number of years?
Yes. It's a little embarrassing, but yeah.
What's it about?
Well, it's about two people, siblings, a brother and sister, who are both people who stutter, but they've dealt with their speech impediments in dramatically different ways. So The older sister is a covert stutterer, you know, who uses any means necessary in order to conceal the fact that she is a person who stutters, and her life is sort of governed by shame and hiding. And her younger brother did not have the ability to hide his stutter. And as a result of that, you know, he went through life the way I think most people view stutterers, like how they're portrayed on TV. They're the people who, you know, at that critical crisis moment can't say what they have to say, and it's awful, but let's laugh. And it was terrible, you know. I mean, I had moments like that when I was younger. And so they've both made these dramatically different choices about how they deal with their stutters. I think for the older sister, she perhaps had more of a choice, whereas the younger brother did not. And so the story basically focuses on how they've been living these very separate lives and their lives come together again. And these crutches that the older sister has used throughout her life begin to crumble. And then she's forced to confront the fact that she is a person who stutters, and her brother is forced to confront that also, that she's hidden it from him, that she's let him be alone. So it sounds misery. It sounds like a real dramatic piece of work. And I think that part of the 10 years that I've spent working on this has been just trying to get some perspective on the story and not just focus on, you know, this is how hard it is, but also how funny it can be sometimes, just sort of appreciating the dark humor of not being able to control what you say, not being able to control how you're perceived. I mean, that's something that could apply to anyone. I feel like I've lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. There's a lot to say, like
that's,
always.
That's okay. What's the name of the novel?
Whisper Sing. It's the idea that I've read this, I'm sure you've heard this too, that people, even people with the most severe disfluencies can speak with near perfect fluency when they whisper or they sing.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that to be true with yourself?
I do. I don't sing, which that's, you know, my little gift to everyone, but that is true. I mean, I don't stutter when I whisper. I don't stutter when I sing. I mean, as you can hear, I don't stutter that often. I do teach high school students, which I think sounds like a nightmare to most people who stutter, just the risk involved, especially if one is living as covert. But I don't know, when I'm in control, when I feel at ease to choose my words, and I'm not substituting right now, I just feel comfortable. But anytime I have to introduce myself to someone or say my name, or I'm asked a very specific question where I know I can't word substitute, then I block pretty severely.
Mm-hmm. Is the novel loosely based on your experience with stuttering?
Certainly just the awareness of what it feels like, I think, and this sort of paranoia that that one might feel about any secret, because, you know, this character does govern her life with this desire to conceal who she is. I mean, both from the people around her, even those closest to her, but also I think from herself. And so, I mean, the events of the story are fiction, they're purely fiction, but the emotional truth, which I think is the most important. I think that's why fiction in many ways is more powerful than, you know, nonfiction, because it can really capture that emotional truth. That's absolutely based on real life experience.
Mm-hmm. Are you almost done with it?
I am. I've written the full manuscript, but it's disgustingly long. It's over 700 pages. and so the work now, and I've given myself a deadline, about 2 months time from now, is to revise it, you know, to create that, that, I guess, consistent narrative voice. But I realized going back through it that my attitude towards stuttering has dramatically changed over the last 10 years, which makes sense. I mean, 10 years ago, as I said to you before, I wouldn't even say the word stutter. Somebody could have probably pointed at a person who was stuttering and say, "What is that person doing?" And I would have gone, "I don't know," and run away. So, you know, that's part of what I mentioned before about, you know, trying to just have another perspective, you know, towards my stutter, and to realize it doesn't have to be the end of the world. It's not the end of the world, but it really felt that way. And there are moments, you know, when it might feel that way, but they're brief now. So a big part of that revision process has also been editing in perspective.
So do you have like a launch date in mind?
You're really generous. I am still in the process of submitting the novel to agents. And so the
Okay.
deadline that I have is to put it in the hands of a couple of agents and see what they have to say. So I attended a conference and I pitched the novel to them. And even that, I mean, the effort of sitting down in front of a stranger, introducing myself, I mean, you can imagine how hard that was, especially with the time pressure of you have 10 minutes to make your case to these total strangers. So I did that. I pitched the novel to four agents. I told them what it was about and how my emotional experiences have informed that novel. And all four of them said, we want to read it. Let me have it. And I went, soon. So that's what I'm working on. I'm still a long way away from its being published.
Tell us a little bit about your stuttering history. When did you start stuttering?
My parents say that it was, God, sometime around the age of 2 or 3 that I was highly verbal as a child. And, you know, my parents, like any other parents, you know, probably thought, oh, our daughter is a genius. And then, of course, you know, bam, it hit me like a wall. And they said that I woke up one morning and could not talk. That was how they described it. I'm sure sounds were coming out, but nothing like the sounds they had heard before of, you know, complete words, complete sentences, complete thoughts. I just couldn't talk. And my parents said, well, my mom said, that it was terrifying. You know, not, and of course my immediate association of that was, you know, oh, you know, my parents were ashamed of me. They were embarrassed. But I know now, especially after having my own children, what it is to see your child struggle and to be terrified, to not know what's wrong, to not know how you can help. You know, lucky for me, I have this perspective now with my own kids. But that was the experience for my parents. So they very quickly put me in speech therapy. And I was in speech therapy kind of in and out, maybe until I was about 10. And I don't know why I stopped. I'm sure that I didn't want to be there. I probably experienced a little bit of that, you know, being fluent in speech therapy, but then being asked to transfer those skills into the real world and not wanting to do them. I think a lot of people can relate to that. A lot of people who stutter can relate to that. Or with anything. I mean, with any sort of self-help that you need, you know, it's one thing when you're lying in bed reading that book, you know, this is what you have to do to have a happy life. But then you wake up and think, well, I'm not going to do that. That's embarrassing. Yeah. That was my experience, at least when I was younger. And then, I don't know, I guess maybe because of speech therapy, because I like to read so much, I had an extensive vocabulary and I learned how to become covert, like truly a covert stutterer. You know, not just someone who doesn't want to stutter, but a person, again, who would do anything to hide it, you know, to lie, run away from a situation, avoid, change sentences around, feign stupidity, you know, I don't know that answer, I don't know my name, you know, all of that. And that's how I lived until I was, I don't know, in my late 20s, I guess.
Did you have like an aha moment where all of a sudden you decided that you just couldn't do that anymore?
I mean, I'm sure I did. You know, gosh, that's one of the basis. You know, or one of the axes that story turns around. Sort of that recognition scene. I'm sure I did, but you know, so powerful was this sense of self-protectionism that I had, this denial about myself, that I don't know if it ever came to me as clearly as that. I mean, so the one sort of tangible moment that I guess that I can use to describe it would be, I got so depressed. I mean, really, I just, you know, speech therapists had advised me, you know, don't word substitute, don't avoid, because that list of words you can't say just gets longer and longer and longer. And I felt that list getting longer and longer. And it got to the point where, even just to recall information, if it were some word I couldn't say, like if somebody had asked me the title of a book and I couldn't say the title of the book, and then, but I still knew it, but I would feel bad about not being able, having been able to say the title of the book. Then if somebody asked me about the title of the book again, I wouldn't even remember it. I felt like it was lost to me, like as though a person who doesn't practice a foreign language loses those words. And it was scary. I just sort of saw my future, you know, like literally I had a picture of like water going down a drain, falling down a drain, of just words being lost and then awareness being lost. It was bad. I had to get on medication. I had a lot of, I don't even know how to describe it. Yeah. I mean, so I certainly had a moment, had a lot of them.
Well, you said that you lived as a covert until your late 20s. So would you describe yourself still as a covert stutterer, or have you come out about it?
No, I would not say I'm a covert stutterer at all. I've come out about it, partly because I've decided to, but also partly because of necessity. I mean, those strategies that I used to work, that I used to use that would work, you know, fell apart. And so, I mean, now when, if somebody asks me my name and I can't say it, you know, I do start stuttering in front of them. And so that's the part that I can't hide. But then I've also chosen not to hide, because the old me would have just said, oh my gosh, I have to pee right now, and run away. But so now I tell people, even complete strangers, which is, you know, not the most pleasant thing to do when someone's just asking you for directions or something, you know, like, oh, I'm sorry, I have a stutter, you're going to have to bear with me for a minute. So yeah, it's a little of both, but no, I'm definitely not covert. I'm not, you know, a flag waving cheerleader, but you know, I'm dealing with it the best way I can.
Have you had any therapy as an adult?
Yes, I two different forms of, well, actually more than that, three. Before, as I was sort of going into this downward spiral of depression, I was grasping at straws, you know, trying to find some solution, because I still believed, even though I suspected it, you know, not to be true, I still wanted to believe that this was going to go away. And just to speak about that for a minute, I think that that's the hardest part about having a stutter. It's not the actual act of stuttering in front of a person. I mean, when you're in that moment, you know, it kind of sucks, but like, what are you going to do about it? I think that the worst aspect of having a stutter is that sometimes you don't. And so, yes, you know that you are a person who stutters, but you know that you're also a person who doesn't stutter. And so when your boss says, hey, tomorrow you're going to get up and give this presentation, you might do an amazing job, or you might totally bomb, and you have no idea until you do it. Anyway, so I was still sort of hoping, well, you know, since I am able to be fluent sometimes, maybe at some point I'll be fluent all the time and I won't have to worry about this anymore. Anyway, so before I did lose all hope, I enrolled in a pretty intensive speech therapy program. I don't know if I'm supposed to mention names on your podcast.
It's fine, either way.
I attended the HCRI, Holland's Communications Research Institute, and I attended it twice, actually. And it helped a lot of people. I saw it help them, you know, when we were there, but it was not a good place for me. It was not a good place for a covert stutterer, because the emphasis is on what you're doing, is just on the physical aspect of it. And it was emphasized over and over again, if you are not practicing, which meant thinking about your stutter 100% of the time, then it's essentially your fault if you're stuttering, because, you know, we're showing you how to not stutter. And that was really hard, especially for someone, like me, and I wasn't the only person like this, you know, who had moments, long, you know, strings, paragraphs, hours of fluency, to then be told, you need to think about your stutter and manipulating your, I don't know, I guess your vocal folds and all of the, you know, all of those little fun parts, 100% of the time. And then asking me to go into my classroom and stand in front of my students and sound like a robot. I mean, I just, there was no way I was going to do that. Anyway, so I did Hollins once, and then I, of course, wouldn't transfer those targets into the real world. And then I felt like a loser, you know, it's my fault, I'm still stuttering. And my stutter got worse. And so I went back. And it was when I went back that I realized, hey, this isn't working for me, because I'm really, really disturbed by, you know, by this impediment that I have. Like, I need to come to emotional terms with it. This isn't just a physical issue. This is an emotional, psychological issue. And so the very last day of the Hollins program, they have you practice conversation on the phone. And the phone was always my worst arena for speech. I mean, just forget it. One of the phone calls I made was to a psychologist, and I used my targets and went, you know, hello, my name is Karen Kreitzer, and I am a person who stutters and blah, 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 blah. And I started going to talk to somebody. And it was only through that psychological attention that I was able to come to terms with my speech. And so, and then once I began doing that, then I called a speech therapist again. And but I was just very real with her. And I said, I did Hollins. It was a bad deal for me. I just need confidence and encouragement, you know, to enter certain situations. I don't want to avoid things anymore. And so my speech therapist, Mary, would sit down next to me and hold my hand while I made, you know, phone call after phone call, like, you know, is my dry cleaning ready? You know, and you know, she would watch me and watch how my whole body would seize up, and just point it out to me, Karen, you're terrified. You know, what's the worst that can happen? I mean, just again and again. So I really did need to have both the physical component and the knowledge of an SLP, but working with the psychological component.
Sounds very similar to the experience that I had when I was in therapy as an adult. I did a program of fluency shaping for 2 years at a college, in a college setting. So I had an SLP graduate student as my therapist. And because it was a student, I switched therapists every semester. So for the course of 2 years, I had six different student therapists, and we were only, yeah, it was not a good experience. But because it was fluency shaping, I also wasn't dealing with, as you mentioned, the emotional side and the acceptance piece, which is really what I needed to work on. And I found that I wasn't getting that through strict fluency shaping therapy. So I actually stopped going to speech therapy and, like you, found a psychologist and actually was able to really address coming to terms with the fact that I stutter, and that being a covert stutterer was totally jeopardizing my authenticity as a person, and I just couldn't do it anymore and didn't want to do it anymore. So really, with the help of a good psychologist and really good therapy, I was able to own who I was as a person who stutters and make the decision that I just wanted to present myself as my true self to the world. And it's just interesting that we both kind of had a very similar experience.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I mean, it's interesting. There's so many different ways to take this. I mean, as a person who stutters, I'm tempted to feel, you know, like I'm the only person who feels this way, you know, me, you, anyone else who's a covert stutter or is a person who stutters, you know, only we know what this feels like. But God, it's got to be everybody, right? I mean, we've all got something that we, you know, have to come to terms with about ourselves and then figure out, okay, this is the situation. Now, how am I going to go out and live my life, you know, accepting this? So, yeah, I mean, I absolutely relate to what you're saying.
And I think that's one of the biggest challenges of the whole covert stuttering thing, because we're hiding. And we're hiding a piece of ourselves, and that's what needs to be dealt with just as much as the actual mechanics of speech. And I think both of those together are a real struggle and a real challenge. And it sounds like you've come to terms at least with some of this, because you said that you're really not as covert as you were. So would you say that you've accepted yourself as a person who stutters?
Yes. I mean, but acceptance, I think, you know, these words are shaky, but I don't know what else to use. Acceptance is the word that I would use, but acceptance doesn't mean that if somebody offered me a stutter be gone pill, I wouldn't take it with my own urine. I mean, you know, if I could not do it, I would not do it, but I do it. So there you go. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of all there is to say about it. That's not a very nice way to put it, but I feel like that can be frustrating for people who are covert as well. Just this idea of thinking that everything works in a binary, you know, that you either hate your stutter and you hide, or you freaking love your stutter, let's have a parade for it. And that's not how it is. I mean, with anything, like there are all these, there's a spectrum, there's a shade in between. So yeah, I absolutely accept my stutter, and I'm so glad that I do. I mean, I'm sure you can relate to this. Think about all the time you have wasted just thinking about something you cannot change. I mean, what a waste of time, you know, but I did it too. Having conversations where you're not listening to the other person because you're just thinking, okay, what am I going to have to say next? And I need to set up some options. So if I can't say that one thing, then I can say that thing, and, you know, looking for the exits. And so, yes, I mean, I accept my stutter. I accept it as this is who I am. And, it's a part of me, just like anything else.
You mentioned earlier in the conversation, you mentioned the word self-help. Are you involved in the self-help community?
Well, I reinstated the San Antonio chapter of the National Stuttering Association.
Oh.
So I am involved with that. I'm not actively working on this now, but I volunteered as a CASA, a court-appointed special advocate, and I did that. I mean, obviously, I care about you know, abused and neglected children. A CASA is a person who gets to know all of the people involved in a child custody case when CPS has removed the children from a family because of abuse and neglect. And I listen to the children, I observe where they are, I check in on their parents to see the progress that they're making. And then I give the children a voice in court. I let the judge know, this is what the children want, this is what I think. And I mean, talk about high stakes for a person who stutters. And I decided to do that not only because I think it's a very necessary, important cause, but because it goes back to what you asked about, do I accept myself as a person who stutters? Yes, I accept myself as a person who stutters, and it's time for me to move on. And that's a big part of why I became a CASA, to realize I needed to just get over myself. I spent so much time worrying, how do I sound? How do you think I sound? Who cares? You know, look at these kids, look at these parents. I mean, the parents need just as much help as the kids do. I mean, there are so much, you know, more significant problems out there than for me to be worrying about how I sound. It seems so trivial. And so signing up to be a CASA, and I was very upfront about my stutter with my supervisors and just said, do you think this will be a problem? You know, I don't want to jeopardize anything, you know, for these kids. And they went, absolutely not. Are you kidding? and it wasn't. And so I feel like those perspective checks help, because I think that if we allow ourselves, our stutter can loom too large and it needs to just not be a big deal.
Right. Well, sometimes that's definitely easier said than done. Yeah. Now you mentioned that you reinstated the San Antonio chapter of the National Stuttering Association. So do you guys meet regularly? Do you meet once a month?
Yes, we, you know, we do everything else that the other NSA chapters do. We meet once a month. I try to arrange social opportunities for us as well, so that we're not always meeting at a college campus and a speech learning center. You know, so we'll go out and we'll have coffee or a beer or something like that. And then I also just serve as a resource. You know, like I'll text members if I know that they have, you know, some big event coming up and say, hey, good luck with that, or check in with them, say, hey, I really want to see you at the meeting. You know, something that I've noticed with through leading this chapter has been, I don't know how to phrase this, but it's, I keep on seeing I see myself and everyone who comes in. Mm-hmm. And a big part of that is, you know, I remember trying to come to terms with myself as a person who stutters and really wanting to reach out, but being terrified to reach out at the same time, because the moment you reach out, you make yourself vulnerable. And so you're safer, you know, home on your own watching Netflix. And I mean, every week I receive so many emails from people. Hey, can you tell me more about your group? What do I have to do to come? And I say, you just show up, you know, like we'll be so happy to meet you. And I'll tell them a little bit about me, and they might write back and say, you know, oh, I have a similar experience, and then they don't show up. And it's sad because I've been in that position and you have to be, oh my gosh, my son, just a minute. I'm sorry. And I just, that's so familiar, you know, wanting to connect, wanting help. But I think that one reason why it can be so hard for people who stutter to get help, to make that first step or the second step in showing up, is because to show up is, I think, that maybe second step or that most important step in accepting that you are a person who stutters. And like I said, for, you know, 25 years, I kept on hoping, you know, maybe, you know, when I turn 13, you know, maybe when I graduate from high school, maybe, you know, when this happens, just all of these completely arbitrary milestones, thinking maybe it's going to be over. And of course it's not.
Right. So actually we are in wind down mode, but I wanted to be sure that we had an opportunity to talk about the wonderful essay that you wrote in the book Turning Points, that was compiled and edited by Mona Malley. You wrote a chapter or an essay in that book about your experiences being a covert stutterer. Could you talk a little bit about that and what the title of the essay is, and what prompted you to be involved and actually contribute to the book?
Yeah, I mean, thank you for the opportunity to speak about this, because I really am, you know, eternally indebted to Mona Molly for putting this together, you know, for coming up with the idea. She was the head of the Austin chapter of the NSA at the time, and so it was, as you know, she mentioned it, the topic for our open house, which was the idea of turning points. And Mona was instrumental in helping me accept myself as a person who stutters. You know, I sent her that email, the, hey, I heard about your group. What do I have to do? And she said, you show up, just like I do, but I showed up. I was so struck by her warmth, and not just her warmth. I mean, I knew anyone who was going to be the head of a chapter of the NSA was going to, you know, be friendly and welcoming. But what really struck me was her enthusiasm. You know, she kept on saying, I am so happy you're here. Oh my gosh, this is how it's all going to start to change for you. And I believed her, and it was true. Anyway, she put together a panel about turning points for open house. And the idea was some moment when you realized, you know, it's time for me to make a change. And you asked me about that earlier. I spoke about a particularly dark moment because I think there are lots of little turning points that happen. But what was wonderful about this challenge of speaking to the group, of speaking to anyone really, was it forced me to articulate exactly what it was being, or what it is, to be a person who stutters, to be a covert, or to have been a covert stutterer. And it was hard. It took a long time to write. Because again, I think that so much of what coverts do is try to deny, try to ignore what they do know to be true, that they are people who stutter. I wrote about all of my covert strategies and how those started to fall apart, but how one of the main changes for me, one of the big turning points was, finding out that that I was pregnant. And certainly, you know, my husband and I had, you know, wanted to have a baby, but then, whoo, there it is, you know, or there it will be. And so all of my anxieties about being a person who stutters came back. And I, for so long I had thought, I can't have kids. I'm like, no way. I mean, what am I going to do if my kid, you know, swallows a whole bottle of Advil because, you know, he thinks it's candy? I can't call poison control. And I would, you know, think about maybe if I got this, you know, alarm system, like press a button. And I mean, I'm really like coming up with crazy scenarios for how to live without actually speaking to anybody. But I realized, you know, that is not fair. The attitude, I realized, you know, Karen, you're really going to have to come to terms with yourself as a person who stutters, because how can you possibly support your children, whether they're people who stutter or with any sort of problem that they have, when you hate yourself, you know, for something that you can't control? I think that shortly after I attended my first NSA meeting, and I had to drive, you know, about 80 miles to get there. And I thought, well, that was great, but that was far. And then I got pregnant and went, you know what? I will make that drive. it was an honor to write the piece and be included.
What was the title?
The Problem of Passing. I had felt a sense of power and victory with every conversation that I had when I was able to conceal a stutter. If I spoke to someone and I didn't even feel a block in my throat, I wouldn't even think about it. But any moment where somebody asked, for example, where did you go to college? And I couldn't say, because Connecticut College is so hard to say. And I would, you know, find a way to work around Connecticut College. I would leave like, ha ha, I have hidden it yet again. And I was so proud of myself. And then I just realized, God, this is a terrible way to live. You know, this problem of passing is that you are forever trying to be someone you're not.
Yeah, which is the whole idea behind being a covert stutterer, hiding a part of who we are, and like you said earlier, going to any extreme to make sure that your true person as a person who stutters doesn't show up. That's tough, and I'm sure that I'm sure you got a lot out of writing that essay and that piece, and congratulations for having the book published. I read it and read your piece particularly. Your piece really resonated with me because I could relate to the covert part and having led a life like that. So again, congratulations on getting published.
Thank you so much, and thank you for reading it and for sharing your story too. It's, I mean, that's really why I write, to connect with other people. So I'm glad that my words connected.
Yeah. One last question. You mentioned that you have kids. You have two, right?
Yes, I have two little boys.
Do you worry that they'll stutter?
I don't, well, before I went through sort of some self-searching and what does stuttering mean to me, I was worried very much. I mean, as I said, I worried so much that I didn't want to have kids. And I worry about it now, but not in the sense of oh, that would be so shameful and how embarrassing, and if somebody sees my kids stutter, then they're going to look at me and know that I stutter, because, well, everybody knows I stutter now. So what I do worry about is just how to support them. I want to make sure that I give them what they need, that I can help them. And I think that everyone has his or her own challenge that they carry out into the world. But when I watch them struggle with speech, I really pause before I react, and I think, well, what would I have wanted my parents to do? What did my parents do? And what did other people do? And what helped and what didn't? And so I spend a lot of time thinking about that, about sort of walking this line between acknowledging a stutter, helping them work through it, but then, not wanting to draw too much attention to it, because they're kids and they should just live and it shouldn't be a big deal. So I don't know. I feel like so much of being a person who stutters is just figuring out how to walk a line between so many things. Being a person who stutters sometimes, being a person who does not stutter sometimes, being open about it, wanting to be alone, sort of pushing yourself to be social, and to talk when you don't feel like it. And then also being kind to yourself and thinking, you know what? I have the flu. I don't need to be a part of that phone conference. And that's it. So no, I mean, having children, it reminds me every minute that I'm with them, how I need to not let something like a stutter become the focus of my life, because I have my children, I have my beautiful children, I have my amazing husband, and I have words. So those are more important.
Words. I like the way that you put that in there. That seems like just such a perfect way to end this conversation. I have my children, I have my husband, and I have words. I just want to thank you so much, Karen, for sharing parts of your story. I feel like we could have went on forever.
Sorry.
No. I feel like we just kind of like scratched the surface. Thank you for sharing. People that listen to this, I think, are gonna be inspired by what you've shared, and I'm so glad that you were a guest today.
Thank you so much for having me, Pam. I really enjoyed speaking with you today.
And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.